Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Amara Enya, Jeff Holm, Brian Lambrecht, and Anthony Quesada. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago, where our toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's @Dumo. And if you want to join us on the World Wide Web, it's beyondthebeltway.com. Happy Father's Day. Nice to have you with us this evening. There are just 29 days to go before the Republican convention and 141 days to go before Election Day. And obviously, for the next couple of hours, we have lots to talk about politically. I want to begin, however, with comments made by the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. She was virtually on all the shows today. And she announced today that she's going to Orlando on Tuesday. And she said that they are going to be releasing transcripts, but only a portion of the shooter's transcripts in Orlando will be released. The conversations between the killer and the shooter and police interrogators, or negotiators, I should say. But not everything is going to be released because, as she said, and this is a direct quote, they want to, quote, avoid re-victimizing those who went through this horror. End of question. So my question to begin this evening to those out listening to the broadcast and to our guests around the table, and I'm going to start with Brian Lambrecht making his first appearance. He's a libertarian. He supports Gary Johnson, active with libertarians in DuPage County, just west of Chicago. When you hear the Attorney General say that she's going to release a portion of the transcripts, but not everything, how do you react?
As a libertarian, we're all about transparency and releasing as much information as possible, but I can understand her concerns and I can understand being worried about the long-term ramifications of putting information out. But we believe all information in every aspect should be out there for people to look at and decide.
Anthony Quesada, you are a supporter of Bernie Sanders. Yep. What's your response to the same question?
Well, as an openly gay man, when this shooting first happened, I was completely destroyed and distraught. So if Loretta Lynch is talking about not releasing some of this information to re-victimize some of the people and bring up some of that old feelings, I can understand that.
How would it re-victimize someone? I don't quite understand what she means by that.
Right. And I think that definitely deserves criticism, as does any kind of statement. But clearly in this sort of case where we had, you know, a lot of these families and people who were massacred, they just don't want to hear, you know, the kind of details of what happened, maybe just what the killer's intentions were, rather than hearing those gruesome details and bringing up all that kind of pain.
But again, just to follow up, I don't know whether if they're releasing transcript of what the shooter was saying to negotiators,
right,
before anyone, at least the negotiators, knew the level of the devastation. I don't know what would be in that transcript,
right,
that would embarrass anyone
other than
if he really went off and was saying all of this and all of that, that could be a political problem for the White House.
Sure. And I personally do appreciate transparency as well. And I would hope that they're not withholding any information that the general public should know about.
Amara Enya also joins us. She is a Democrat, basically for Bernie Sanders, but we'll see whether she gets back on the Hillary bandwagon tonight or not. What do you think of the Attorney General's selective release of testimony or conversations?
Well, I think in the interest of making sure that, I think transparency is an issue. I would be supportive of releasing the entire transcript. I think that the victims, unfortunately, this is a horrific event that has happened, but historically when we've had these sorts of incidences, that level of transparency is necessary, not only to give confidence that the right steps were taken at every step of what happened, but also it should be in the public domain. So I'm not sure that the fear of re-victimizing should cause us to be selective.
Jeff Helm also joins us. First appearance on the program. You were the president of the Chicago Young Republicans, supporting Donald Trump for president. What is your reaction to the Attorney General's comments?
You know, it sounds like a lot of dodging the question, right? I think I agree with you that the re-victimization idea is kind of weak. I think we absolutely want to get all the information out there that can help prevent any atrocity like this from happening again. And if that's politically inconvenient to the Justice Department or the White House, then that's not the people's problem. That's their that's those administration's problems.
And at this particular point, obviously, there has been a great deal of discussion about whether, you know, there's been talk about terrorism. There's been talk about gun control. We will talk about both of those things this evening. But I want to spend a little time talking about the conduct of the FBI. Is that one of the things that may concern you the most, Brian, because red flags were seen, they were known, they were reported on by coworkers, by the gun shop owner. It seems to me that the FBI missed the point.
In America, I think most people are very skeptical and cynical about the FBI in general already, the FBI, the CIA. We question everything. As citizens, we love to question all of this, and we want to know what's going on. That's one of the reasons why we're so big on transparency. The more information you have out there, more people can look through it, and they can interpret it, critique it, and help bring in more information, other people who may have information on that. And usually the best information we get is from citizens, people who are paying attention, people who are gathering information. When everything goes through the FBI, then it goes to that little sensor gap, and that's what makes people a little distrusting of what comes from them.
But again, in this particular – go ahead, Amara.
I think hindsight is 20/20. I mean, I think this just underscores the fact that when it comes to national security, it's always the things that you miss that cause the catastrophe, and that's what gets all the attention. No one really knows all of the things that were thwarted or other attacks that could have been prevented. And so in hindsight, yes, we can assess what all of the red flags that were that took place, but I don't
think they missed things in San Bernardino as well.
They did. But again, I think that it underscores the fact that we only there's only attention when they make the mistakes, right? It's hard to predict, even with the best information, when they should make a move, when they shouldn't make a move. And unfortunately, it just comes out that when the tragedy occurs, we can then look back and see all of the missteps that were made.
Jeff, how much time should we spend worrying about this?
Well, I mean, you know, I think it's interesting that one of the proposals immediately trotted out after this atrocity and other atrocities similar to this are increased background checks. And in this case, and in San Bernardino, the shooter passed the background checks, right? They were federally background checked at a federal firearms license dealer. And I don't understand what more background checks in that proposal is going to do here. I mean, the issue here is one of prior restraint, right? Unfortunately for people, prior restraint or thought crime, trying to figure out how we prevent some things like this by infringing on people's religious or religious liberty, infringing on people's liberties.
Some would argue that it might infringe on their religious liberty. Anthony, does it?
How so?
Well, I mean, if someone – do you have a right to be a radical in this country? Do you have a right to have radical beliefs?
The thing is
– surprising it's taking you so long to answer this question.
Because I hope you're not targeting Muslims. That's what I hope you're not getting
to. I'm getting to the question is can you be a devout Muslim and not be targeted because of what some Muslims have said and done?
You have every
that's the
right
answer.
To,
I want to get everybody's response. Yeah. We do have to pause. I've created this little flurry here right before the break.
You did it.
1-800-723. That's my job. 1-800-723-8289 from coast to coast and border and around the world at beyondthebeltway.com. I'm Bruce Dumont, live from Chicago.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
Thank you all very much, Admiral Kelly, Captain Card, officers and sailors of the USS Abraham Lincoln, my fellow Americans. Major combat operations in Iraq have ended. In the Battle of Iraq, the United States and our allies have prevailed.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night on Antenna TV.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And Anthony, I want to let you pick up the ball here. The question was, don't you have a right to be radical in this country? And at what point do you think it's valid that the FBI knocks on your door and starts asking questions?
Well, the thing is, you can always you have the right to have radical ideas, right? But I don't know. So you provided a very vague kind of description of what you meant by radical. Now, instead of like, so I'm radical, absolutely, I'm radically left.
Right.
So if someone is radical in the sense that they want to commit terrorism or they want to hurt other people, do you have that right? No, of course you don't have the right to infringe on somebody's, you know, liberty of life and, you know, pursuit of happiness. You don't, you shouldn't be able to do that. But we have to ask ourselves, what makes people radical? You know, people just don't turn bad and want to commit these acts of terror for no reason. They have been oppressed, they have been manipulated, they've been exploited by, you know, a dominant
narrative.
Or they
believe in a religion that condones killing homosexuals.
Right, which there is no religion that does that. And so where we have a culture that propagates that.
You don't think that Islam does that?
Well, I believe that, you know, there are values that inside Islam that people, you know, should be abiding to. But I think there are theocratic governments that are oppressive that promote those policies in that religion.
There are religious believers. There are religious people, leaders of the religion who believe that.
Right. And a majority.
I mean, there are countries that believe
that. And a majority of supporters don't. And I believe that narrative will change over time because it has to.
I would actually say that statistical evidence refutes that idea that the majority of believers do not. If you look at the surveys that have been done in Muslim majority countries, the question is whether people believe homosexuality is morally good or bad, right? That's the question. And something like 95% is the lowest number. And these are countries in the Gulf. These are countries – this is Indonesia. This is Malaysia. There are 100 million people living in countries where they can be executed, put to death for partaking in homosexual,
right? And those are oppressive theocratic governments. So stop blaming the righteous people who do not commit and believe those beliefs.
Throughout history, religions have always been used to oppress, to as an excuse for terrorist behavior. Whether they're Christians, whether they're Muslims, whether under the names of any religion. So I think Islam seems to be the flavor of the month right now, simply because of policies going back a few decades that have created the circumstances where the
Christians have not called for killing people that disagree.
Christians have bombed abortion clinics. Christians have done that. Christians have committed war across the world.
They have done that. I mean, but Christian theology does not say it's all right to kill someone who disagrees.
And why do Christians do it?
Well,
they don't.
I guess
not historically.
The point
not
is,
as part of the religious teaching.
The point is that religions, whether Christianity, Islam, or even other religions, have always been used by those who seek to use it as a tool to commit acts based upon their own beliefs. But where we fall into dangerous territory is when we paint an entire people with that brush, and that's what's been happening here.
You're painting.
Right.
As a libertarian, I know what it's like to be called radical. Libertarian Party started in 1971, and in 1971 we were openly calling for legalization of drugs, legalization of marijuana. We openly supported gay marriage and equality rights. Those were all radical ideas in 1971. They were dangerous ideas. Today, they're generally accepted. It's not really that much of an issue anymore when people talk about these things. So the idea of radicalization being an idea, that's one thing, but as soon as people want to cross a line where you start to hurt other people, when you start to infringe on other rights and go after and actively harm people, now you've changed the dynamic of radicalization.
In your view, I want to start with you, Jeff. In your view, what should the United States government be doing to reduce the likelihood of additional massacres like we saw in Orlando?
Well, I mean, so how prevent something like what happened in Orlando? I mean, as you mentioned earlier, the parade of red flags, right? The FBI investigated him twice for connections for terror, and that was based on statements that from his coworkers saying that they were afraid of him, that he was saying that he was Bin Laden's nephew and that he was going to, you know, kill people and all this kind of stuff. And the FBI wrote his coworkers off as racist and closed the investigation. I mean, this is kind of they went through this all these steps where somebody, you know, everybody says, if you see something, say something. And these people said something, you know, they saw something and said something and were written off as being bigoted, prejudiced, or whatever, because that's apparently.
So is step number one, in your view, a dramatic review of the way in which the FBI conducts investigations of this nature? I mean, is that a common denominator, you think, that needs to be covered here?
I think that absolutely when something like this happens, you need to reevaluate how it happened. Now, obviously not with a question of casting blame, but a question of preventing the next one, right? Okay, so how many flags need to go off at what levels before somebody, you know, up the food chain somewhere gets a notice they can't ignore?
Let's just stick to the real practical point here. Would you agree with that, Anthony, that there has to be a dramatic or a serious review and maybe a dramatic reassessment of the questions that the FBI asks people so that they don't make a mistake again? Even though we will acknowledge that for the most part, they don't make mistakes. But when they do make mistakes, a lot of people die.
Sure, absolutely. And I think, yeah, so there are severe inefficiencies and malpractices within the FBI and the CIA. But more importantly, that's just taking care of a symptom, right? So the FBI and the CIA are going after these people who are about to commit something. Why are they committing it? Why are we going to the root causes of why people are committing these things? So
what I'm trying to do right now is let's do piece by piece to see how realistic it is to get to the first piece and whether there's agreement, political agreement, either at this table or in Congress. Amara. No congressman likes to stand up and be the guy that says, "Oh, the FBI screwed up." But in this particular case, maybe they did. Or their conduct has to be reviewed.
It does have to be reviewed. Absolutely, it has to be reviewed. Mm-hmm. Because the question is, how many red flags go up before someone within the operation says, takes some kind of action that could prevent this from happening? So I think the assessment is absolutely necessary. But again, hindsight is 2020, right? So we can always say, looking back, this could have happened, we could have done this differently. I think the FBI has to be in a constant state of evaluating their policies and practices to make sure that they get better and better at cutting these things off at the root.
Ryan, your response.
They need to be held accountable, the FBI, for what they're doing. There are a lot of bad ideas out there, a lot of bad things people will do, but freedom of speech itself is not a crime. Bad ideas may suck, but if nobody's harming anybody, if nobody's infringing on anybody's rights, at what point do you say, okay, we're going to go and we're going to censor you, we're going to spy on you, we're going to dig in all your records, and we're going to start following you around, confiscating your property, going into your bank accounts, looking through your records? That's a problem when nobody's committed a crime.
Let's move now to the favorite Democratic issue, and that is the gun. The gun that was used, and whether or not people should have a right to have a military-style weapon in their possession. Jeff, what do you think?
So I think this is one of the areas where vast ignorance is on display from the left and writing up what happened, right? It's called an AR-15. It wasn't an AR-15. It was a Sig Sauer MCX, completely different gun, right? It's not fully automatic. Fully automatic weapons were banned first in the 20s, and that ban was strengthened again in the 80s. It's literally impossible to get a fully automatic weapon. You can count on one hand the number of times a fully automatic weapon was used in a murder at all, let alone a mass killing. The thing is that if we really cared about violence, gun violence, we'd go after handguns, not these flashy things that look scary. The guns look scary, so let's go after them. Because the majority of murders gun murders are committed with handguns.
But let me ask you. Practically speaking, politically speaking, we found it very difficult in this country to deal with handguns in a significant way. My question to you is, let's focus on the MX, whatever it was.
Sig Sauer MCX.
Okay. Does anyone who's not in the military have a right to carry that weapon?
Absolutely. Absolutely. There's no
Why?
Difference, right? Because
what
the second
it, what is the, purpose
the Second
of?
Amendment prohibits the government from saying which weapons can be outlawed. It doesn't say which guns we can have, right? I mean, obviously, I'm with Scalia on this one. It's not an infinite right. There are certain things, but you know, a DC style where they issue one permit a month and you can get one gun a month as a way of banning guns, that's kind of an end run around it. But absolutely, there's no reason that the government should be able to say you can have this gun and not that gun.
You agree with that, Brian?
I don't believe there should be any restrictions on it. And the reason is this. Murder is illegal. You can't make murder illegal-er.
Right.
The gun, there's all different kinds of guns. I'm not a gun guy specifically myself, but the way I look at it is murder's already illegal, and the idea of of what kind of gun is being used, it kind of blurs it. And I come from Chicago. I understand what it's like where people are killing each other and they're using handguns, whatever they can get themselves on. But the laws don't make people more safe. What they do is they basically create more victims.
What about the ease with which someone can get a weapon like this?
Everybody that I know that owns a gun hasn't really had much of an easy time getting them. There's a lot of background checks that are already in place. It's pretty tough to do that.
I think a lot of the issues, so for example, I'm just using Chicago as the example because we have such an endemic problem with gun violence. A lot of the guns that are used in many of the killings and the shootings have not been legally obtained. And in fact, the flow of guns into the city of Chicago, across borders, state borders, even in transport, that's a big issue that we've not been able to tackle. So even as we're talking about increasing regulations on guns or banning certain types of guns, the real issue is the illegal flow of guns, and it gets into the hands of people who don't care about getting a background check or don't care about it.
So what I'm hearing you say is that no matter how strong the law, if you want to do harm and you want to have access to guns, you're going to find a way to do it, and you're not going to be worried about what the law is.
Well,
Anthony, you agree with that?
Kind of in a sense, but the fact that, you know, making gun regulations and having these laws, it will hold back people, right? I mean, they can't legally buy them, but they'll still obtain them illegally. So what is the real problem here? The real problem is, why are people killing people? What is causing this kind of disruption and distraughtness between communities? And having, you know, what kind of standards of living do people have to live in to kill other people?
You hate them.
Right. So why are we living in a world full of hate? That's what we need to start answering.
That's a bigger question. We'll try to address that in the next half hour.
Absolutely.
1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont from Chicago.
The Signal, a rockin' new hit musical. From doo-wop to the king of pop blues, to the Beatles, gospel, to great radio hits. The Signal, the musical about a steel town and its street corner sounds. Starring live, the Spaniels, Hall of Famer Willie Rogers of the Soul Stirrers, and Stormy Weather. August 12th, 13th, and 14th. Tickets on sale now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications box office or TicketWeb.com.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. And again, if you recall that song, you sing along. Well, there's no thing to sing along. You got to dance along with this song. That's the Macarena. And that is reminding you that a brand new exhibit is open at the Museum of Broadcast Communications called Watching TV in the 1990s. It's about the television, the fashions, music, all aspects of the 1990s. It will be officially opening in a couple of days, but you can come on down again Tuesday through Saturday from 10 in the morning until 5 at night. Anybody at the table? Can you do the Macarena? Anybody?
I can,
no.
But I won't.
You can, but you won't.
Okay, I can do something.
You know the first part of it. Yeah, okay. Anyway, let's go back. Let's take a call. Jason in Washington, D.C., listening to us on the Internet tonight, or actually on SiriusXM Satellite Radio. Go ahead, Jason.
Hey, before we even talk about guns, let's just say if anybody was serious about dropping gun deaths, the very first thing they would say is we need to end the failed drug war, because people in Chicago are not killing each other over toasters. It's about a failed drug war. Mm-hmm. Okay? So this lets you know that people really aren't caring about gun deaths. Okay? Because, you know, it's like the fat person. You know, it's not the sweet and low. It's the fact that you eat a pint of ice cream before you go to bed. That's the solution if you want to have an impact. But going back to this stuff, look, you know, again, this is the most vetted person in history that's ever had a gun, I think. Right? I mean, could we have done anything more in terms of vetting this person? But again, the failures of our government is not at the forefront of this. How did all of this colossal failure happen? It kind of reminds me of like the failures that led to 9/11. You know, again, at the end of the day, All right. The thing I'm focusing in on is, what was this guy saying? I want to know what's in his transcript. And you know what? A big part of it was, at least according to the witnesses, stop bombing my country. This has a lot to do with, again, a U.S. foreign policy. Now, look, we're at war, and I'm expecting that things are going to take place. But again, we're back to this point that when it comes to looking at the situation, what do we expect? You think you can have a society? I mean, this guy could have easily just filled up a van with gasoline over the course of a month and loaded it with road flares and driven into this club and incinerated everybody. And what would we be talking about then? Would we talk about banning gasoline? Would we talk about banning people from renting vans if they're on a terrorist watch list? And the thing that's got me scared about this terrorist watch list sort of thing is there's no due process. There is no due process. So this whole idea, we're going to just suspend the Constitution because of something minor, something happening like this. Remember,
you don't think this was minor.
No, but I meant from the standpoint of, like, if we're really talking about deaths and so forth, when we go to go back to this, we are at half-century lows on homicide rates. It is the safest time to ever be alive. But you would never get that from the people that are in the media. They want to get everybody fearful, and they're saying, in order to be safe, even though we're safer than we've ever been, you got to give up more of your constitutional protections. Remember, the Constitution isn't there when everything is going right.
You know,
it's for when things are going wrong.
One of the things that you said that gets back to the opening question tonight, and that is when the Attorney General says that she's going to release some of the conversation between the shooter and the police and FBI negotiators or police negotiators. When she says that, and she says we're going to hold some things back because, as she said, she wants to avoid re-victimizing, I want to know what she means by that, because I don't know what she means by that. And anything that is left from the American people now is going to raise suspicion. It's going to take conspiracy theorists and drive them nuts, because they're going to say, what is it about that conversation that the American people can't deal with? We're still debating whether or not, you know, a results of a congressional investigation into 9/11, whether or not all of it should be released to find out the role of Saudi Arabia in 9/11. We're still debating some paperwork there that the people of America, we're not smart enough. We can't deal with it. It's going to create problems. I mean, the point is, if we live in a transparent society, let it out. So I don't know. The only thing you brought up a good point. If indeed the shooter in his negotiations is talking about that maybe one of the motivations of what he did was because, you know, people were bombing his country, or his country being Afghanistan, which is where his father is.
He's an American citizen.
He's an American citizen. But again, if he's talking about if what you say is true, Jason, that one of the reasons why he did this was talking about, you know, U.S. foreign policy, which is what Anthony's been saying. You know, if that's what he was talking about when he was sitting in that nightclub, I want to hear that.
No.
I don't want that to be put aside because it might be something that, and in many cases, I think there's already suspicion of the Obama Justice Department. I don't want them saying, you know, if every third word out of his mouth was Allah this and Allah that. I want to hear that. I want to hear it.
No, I mean, again, let's just agree to one thing. In the world that we live in today, the solution to 99% of our problems is hyper-transparency. The government wants to know everything about you and what you're doing with your banking and who you're talking to with your metadata, but God forbid it comes to discussing what's actually going on in the back halls of power. That's where the real danger is. See, I worry about a mass killer like something like this, but I'm more worried about people making deals that can send people to war.
Okay, Jason, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. Before the break, we were talking about hate. And again, Brian, you wanted to talk about something that Anthony had said in the last segment.
And actually, Jason brings up a good point about the drug war. Is, you know, we put on a war on poverty, we get more in poverty. We put on a war against drugs, we get more drugs. People get killed because government's trying to protect people. So we protect people by locking them up in prison for basically victimless crimes. One of the things I wanted to say is the original gun laws that came about in this country were after the Civil War. And they were done in the 70s. South, and the reason for this was because they didn't want freed slaves to be armed.
Absolutely.
And the problem with that is, were people saying protect us from each other? No, it was the government saying protect us from the people. That's a very important part. One of the things that I saw the other day is that ever since the incident happened, what skyrocketed in sales? Gun sales in the LGBT community. Yep. They're paying attention. Yep. People don't want to be victims anymore, and they're starting to take a proactive approach to that. And of course, government's reaction is, okay, we got to swoop in there and do that. And whether it's guns, whether it's what we made alcohol illegal. We made alcohol illegal in this country. We had prohibition. It was a huge failure.
The underlying issue, and I think Jason, the caller, brought this up as well, is that policy is what drives a lot of what we're seeing. So when it comes to the shootings and the violence, until we as a city, as a society, address the root causes of violence, which would be the conditions of poverty, which would be disinvestment, which would be a failed war on drugs, a failed war on poverty.
But that is not likely to be the case here.
But even
the
case,
it is not, Anthony.
But what
it
I'm
is
saying
not.
Is there's so much energy on focusing on the gun regulations and background checks. But
only
that's
by
a,
Democrats.
And right,
only
but,
by Democrats.
And
only
that's
Democrats.
And that is reactionary.
And by extension, the media.
And that is reactionary. And I think it is a failure of public policy that whenever these incidents occur, instead of getting to or trying to address the root causes of those incidents, is we focus on the back end, which is okay. We'll make gun laws tougher, but that doesn't actually address the fact of someone who's going to get a gun.
I just strongly disagree with this. Right? There are no circumstances under which I can go kill 50 people, regardless of how terrible my life was, what circumstances I was brought up in. There's no circumstances in which that is okay. Right. The only way that that's okay is in self defense.
But no one is saying that that's okay.
But that's what you just said about the root causes.
The root causes of violence. Look, before someone gets a gun, they have to have a certain mentality.
Precisely.
Right. There has to be a dehumanization that's taken place before you actually go to kill someone.
Precisely.
So until as a society we get to the fact of how someone could have in their mind to get a gun, whether illegally, we'll say in this case.
But wait a minute.
But he got it legally.
In this particular case. I think it's clear to me it was his religion. He was a devout believer in that his religion was giving him the authority. He was going to get his 19 virgins because he was going to go in and he was going to kill people. Those people happened to be gay.
Well, they were targeted specifically because they were
gay. Many scholars in that religion hate gay people. There was a man who spoke in Orlando, Florida, 3 weeks before this incident, and he was on television basically saying that you had an obligation to kill gay people. Now we can't pretend we can't pretend that doesn't happen.
But is the response to kill them and to hate them? Why don't we try to
say
that?
I understand. What we need is, and I think this is what Republicans are talking about. If we have a president that can't even use the terms radical Islam terrorists, you know what? That's what they are. Bill Maher is absolutely correct. Bill Maher, one of the most articulate and yet very funny liberal comedians in the world. He called it exactly where it is. You don't say the words, you got your head in the sand.
But then the next question is, well, how do you respond to that? Does that mean banning radical Islam terrorists? Does that mean profiling all Muslims? From a policy stance, again, how do you respond? What is the response?
We have to create a narrative, and we have to create a world in which people don't have to resort to these kinds of things. Clearly, this man was
homophobic.
Change their
religion. Change their religion.
Change ourselves.
Change their religion. No. You know what? Wait just a minute. You don't have to change anybody at this table, Anthony. There isn't anybody at this table that's going to go out and get a weapon and go anywhere to kill anybody. Nobody. The people that are listening to this program, I will say no one listening or watching this program is going to go out and get a weapon and kill people. You know who's going to do it? If you're a devout believer in your religion,
oversimplifies a lot of the reasons why people become quote unquote radicalized. Not just in the Middle East, on the continent, in Central Asia, there are political reasons based on foreign policy that have created an environment in which individuals become radicalized, where religion actually becomes a foil to do whatever terrorist acts they want to commit. it. So I think we're completely missing that.
Yeah. All right, I want to come back. We have disagreement on that. 1-800-723-8289. Brian, I know you want to get into it. So do you, Jeff. Back shortly from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. 1-800-723-8289. Where do you come down? What should the government be doing now to reduce the likelihood? It's going to happen again, folks. It will happen again. What can we do to reduce the likelihood of it happening frequently? Back to you.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Brian, you wanted to make a point about hate.
Yeah, now I got to remember exactly what that point is. I want to jump back for a second. You made a comment about guns earlier, and the one thing I want to say is, as a libertarian, I hang out with a lot of people who have a lot of guns. They're very proud of them. Nobody has any hate in their heart, and they never, ever want to use those to kill somebody. That's the purpose, is owning a gun and hoping you never actually have to use it.
Absolutely.
So there's a lot of people that do feel that way. And you brought up foreign policy, and you brought up a culture of hate, and that's the part where they come and they clash together. And it's a cultural thing. I don't think government can get in there and do that, because now you've got government limiting free speech. There's speech that's disgusting, and I hate it, but I defend their right to have that speech, as bad as it is, sure, until they have the actions. And the idea of culture of hate, we got to work better as a society to improve that.
Right. Exactly.
Go ahead.
So, and that should reflect our policy. You see, when we start practicing social democracy and we start making government represent our values and our vision for a peaceful world, then that should reflect our policy, therefore changing the narrative, therefore changing the culture. That's how we will have a world.
I love all of that, except having the government do it, because now the government's going to have to limit speech, and the government's going to decide who can say what.
We're not limiting speech. We're just saying, let's create a standard of living in which people don't have to resort to those kinds of
actions.
How
do you create that standard of living?
I want to get Jeff in here. Jeff,
so, scary. So here's the thing, right? I mean, I'd love to get rid of all violence, right? But the fact is that men are not angels, right? And that governments do not make them angels, okay? If you want to look an example of a socialist paradise, there's plenty of examples. Venezuela, Cuba, same standard of living. The standard of living deteriorates where people can't get basic commodities like toilet paper because the government has rationed everything. I mean, the idea that I would – it would be so great if we could get rid of violence. The fact is that government is not going to be able to do it.
We have – that's why we need a political revolution, don't we not? That's why we need to take big money out of politics. That's why we need the NRA to stop lobbying Congress. That's why we need to have big pharma to stop lobbying Congress, so that we can properly, this war on drugs can end, because clearly marijuana can be used for medicinal reasons. Mm-hmm. But you know, we have big pharma, lobbying Congress, and therefore it's causing all sorts of kind of crime.
So you're clearly
locally
for collective action.
We have at the table people that want to radically change. Okay, you're for Donald Trump. Now, Donald Trump, I mean, he's your guy now. We should mention you were for Marco Rubio.
Yep.
But you're the head of the Young Republicans of Chicago.
Yes, sir.
So you are for Donald Trump because he is the nominee of your party.
Yep.
So express to the man on your right, which he's never on the right of anybody.
I think you'd take offense to that.
But explain to him why you think Donald Trump is the answer to the revolution that you think is needed in the country.
I mean, I don't know that Donald Trump is trying to foment a revolution, and I don't know that I could say anything about Donald Trump that would be persuasive to a Sanders supporter. I mean, the thing is that Elections are about choices, right? And unfortunately, you go to war with the army you have, not the army you want. And Donald Trump is the nominee, and you have two choices, because as Brian laments, you know, there are very, very high hurdles to third party runs. He was explaining during one of the breaks and some of the signature thresholds that are needed. And the fact is, you've got two choices. You've got Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, maybe Bernie Sanders, depending on what goes down at the convention, if Bernie could decide to get enough superdelegates. And so my guy's Donald Trump, right? I mean, he's running on what is essentially the equivalent, the 2016 equivalent of Hope and Change, which is Make America Great Again. It's something that you can't really argue with. I mean, wouldn't you want America to be great? I mean, the thing is that what Donald Trump is saying are things that have been pushed to the edges of conversations, right? The idea that, you know, hey, maybe we shouldn't just let anybody into our country. Maybe there are reasons for borders, right? I'm not saying we keep everybody out, okay? Everybody likes to make hyperbole out of this, you know, and say, oh, we're going to ban this group or ban that group. I mean, it's kind of an easy statement to make that, yes, one of the jobs of government is to make sure the people coming into this country are the people that will be productive and all this kind of stuff.
I have to say.
And I disagree as well.
You're
probably against borders.
As we talk about the narrative that has been predominant in this country, particularly around hate and bigotry and all of that, you have a candidate who has been the epitome of basically the harbinger of that narrative. When the role of president, I mean, this is actually dangerous, especially when we're talking about foreign policy, to have a candidate that speaks so cavalierly about, well, I'm going to tell China this and I'm going to do that with Russia. That is very, very dangerous as a matter of even our national security.
When what you does have it a say about the fact that he won the Republican nomination? Fair and square. What does it say?
It says what he had, that the only similarity that I see between he and Bernie Sanders are that they are not establishment candidates. And unfortunately for the country, fortunately for him, he tapped into the desire for anti-establishment candidates. That's the only advantage that he had, and he manipulated it expertly.
Which means that a majority of Republicans believe that.
I don't know that they believe it. I think they saw the inevitability of his
Anthony?
Campaign.
Yeah, absolutely. So the American people are very, very upset with establishment Democrats and establishment Republicans who have been working in favor for the rich and the powerful for way too long. So the American people are displeased. None of us want corporate greed in politics. Do you like Wall Street influencing our politicians? Do you like Wall Street influencing our politicians?
I would ask you,
what's the difference between collective action?
Let me finish, please. So the difference is that the Republicans are being tapped into this fear and desperation by Donald Trump, while Bernie Sanders is talking about unification and love. That's how we should be. That's what we should be.
He is talking about the fear to be fearful of corporations. Donald Trump is talking about fearful of people that sneak into the country that may have criminal records that kill people.
But the thing is, but he's not talking about the root causes. What is causing people to cause disruption or violence and committing this to other people?
He's just looking at the surface of the issue. He's talking about people that are coming into this country because we have a sieve on the southern border and we do not have a proper immigration policy that is enforced. That's what he's talking about. And people
Which
are
is a concrete issue.
But this may be a generational difference.
They're not all rapists. They're not all murderers. Right. But you know what? There was one murderer who killed Kate Steinle.
And this may be a legitimate issue, which is immigration, as an example, right? It's a very legitimate issue. However, he has demonstrated a clear lack ignorance, quite frankly, and a lack of understanding of how difficult it is to actually address these issues, whether it's foreign policy, whether it's immigration, because he makes catchphrases that
like root causes.
No. He boils down what are actually complex issues into catchphrases, and that's misleading because it leads people to believe that there are very simple solutions, and that's not
Isn't
what
it takes. Our
phone
about
number is 1-800-723-8029. 1-800-723-8029. If you want to email me a comment, Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. We're going to pause back shortly with more conversation. Full hour.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real Authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The Signal, a rockin' new hit musical. From doo-wop to the king of pop, blues, to the Beatles, gospel, to great radio hits. The Signal, the musical about a steel town and its street corner sounds. Starring live, The Spaniels, Hall of Famer Willie Rogers of the Soul Stirrers, and Stormy Weather. August 12th, 13th, and 14th. Tickets on sale now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications box office or TicketWeb.com.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Back and Jeff, I want to pick up with you. You're head of the Chicago Young Republicans. You're for Donald Trump now. Originally, you were for Marco Rubio, but you also like Carly Fiorina. So you're stuck with the Republican Party candidate. Do you think this is just your belief now? Do you think there's going to be a serious challenge to Donald Trump at the Cleveland Convention?
You know, I have no idea. I mean, there's a lot of things that could happen. And, you know, there's a lot of arcane rules that people who have been paying attention to have gotten very enthusiastic about. And one of them, I believe, is Rule 41, mm-hmm. which is that the rules of the last convention are automatically assumed to be the rules for this convention. Mm-hmm. And in those rules, it talks about delegates being bound and all that kind of stuff. If the Rules Committee, for whatever reason, were to decide to throw out that rule that basically unbinds all the delegates, then it would be a complete free-for-all, and there's a lot of incredibly crazy stuff that could happen.
There's movements afoot that's going to happen. But let me ask you this question. If that happened, would overturning and throwing Donald Trump out of the convention, would that be more damaging to the party than having him run as the candidate of the party?
You know, that's a question that I'm not quite sure how to answer. I think that there'd certainly be some fallout to it, right? Especially if they decided to put somebody who doesn't generate a lot of enthusiasm, like let's say Jeb Bush, in as the nominee.
Well, there'd be rioting inside the hall. They wouldn't.
Yeah, I mean,
bring the police inside the hall.
Yeah, I mean, it basically just. I mean, even though there's a lot of strife on the Democrats' side between Hillary and Bernie, like, even if Bernie were the nominee, if the Republicans did that, like, they would basically be ceding the election. Anything's possible kind of thing. This could be one of the most entertaining and captivating RNCs of my life.
What do you think, Anthony? Let's talk about what's going to happen with the Democrats. Okay, now you spent the last couple of days at the People's Summit in Chicago.
Yes.
and you are a Democratic socialist. You're for Bernie Sanders.
Yes, I am.
If Hillary Clinton ends up with the nomination, who are you going to vote for in November?
So these are the kind of answers we were looking for at the People's Summit, trying to generate ideas and figure out how we can direct our message and our revolution. I have some numbers here. So the Bernie Sanders campaign, after his most recent live stream, put up a page on his website to have supporters who are to express interest in running for office. There were 7,000 Bernie Sanders supporters who expressed interest in running for office. At the People Summit, we had 365 people who expressed interest in running for office, including myself. So we are the political revolution. This will happen. And from now until November, we will hold the DNC and Hillary Clinton accountable to adopting our progressive platform and pushing the DNC more left.
Now, if they don't do it, let me come back to the question I asked.
Right.
Who are you going to support in November if she's the nominee? Are you going to support her? Are you going to support Jill Stein?
Right.
I don't think you're going to support Donald Trump. Would you support Gary Johnson? What are you going to do?
It'll definitely not be Gary Johnson. It'll definitely not be Donald Trump. It is the DNC's and Hillary Clinton's responsibility to earn my vote, to make me vote with confidence
If she doesn't, what do you do? Do you sit home?
I will have to see what our collective thinks. What will be effective?
There's no individual. It's got to be what the collective
sounds
thinks.
Like. The Borg.
The Borg.
What will we do to ensure that Donald Trump does not win? Because he cannot win. So if we have a viable option or possibility in Bernie Sanders running for an independent or running on the Green Party, we don't know.
Would you like Bernie Sanders to run as an independent?
I would.
Would you like him, Amara, to run as an independent?
Ultimately, I'm interested to see how Sanders is able to influence the Democratic platform. That is of utmost importance at this point.
What is an absolute must for you?
It's the principles that he's run on, is particularly around campaign finance reform, around bringing to fore the issues of income inequality in this country,
What about an easier thing to accomplish at a Philadelphia convention? How about bringing democracy to the democratic process? How about breaking up the superdelegates? Because that has been one of the first three things he talks about, or first five things he talks about for 8 months now. It seems to me that if you've got a 4-day convention, that's correcting the machinery of the Democratic Party.
I can't believe
that any Bernie Sanders supporters would allow a Democratic Party run by Hillary Clinton to get away from completely revolutionizing and completely scrapping that out.
I would love to see that conversation. I would love for that conversation to happen. Unfortunately, the Sanders campaign, which was never expected to do what it did, had to play by the machinery and the rules that are already established. Right. And I think they got caught up and unfortunately with an expert like Hillary Clinton and her campaign who knows how to manipulate that system to their
advantage. But if he goes to Philadelphia and every political pundit wants to know, to what extent is Bernie Sanders' enthusiastic supporters, in fact, we've just seen one example of it tonight, they're not saying, and I don't think you're saying, you didn't jump up and say you're going to be for Hillary either. You want to extract a pound of flesh for everything that Bernie Sanders has done. And I got to tell you, if you walk out of Philadelphia and you don't have that change, it's been for naught. Because
you
know how parties get changed? Parties get changed when one wing of the party or one party loses. There will be a revolution. There will not be a revolution in the Democratic Party if Hillary Clinton wins.
Yes, there will be. Again,
I
gave you numbers. I gave you 7,000 people, 7,400 people who will run for local offices. We are going to reform the Democratic Party. If they do not abide to our demands now, we will change that party.
How will it affect President Hillary Clinton?
We will hold her accountable.
How? For 7,000 low-level elected officials are not going to change Hillary Clinton.
There are 12 million progressives who voted for Bernie Sanders. There are 12 million people ready to hold the DNC and Hillary Clinton accountable. If she does not follow us, then we will march on to Washington, D.C. We will have a million people there, and we will scare them because this is our country and our revolution.
Okay.
There's still much
to be said. What do you think of this?
I want to respond because about supporting Hillary Clinton. comes in. There's much to be said about what the platform looks like after with Senator Sanders' supporters and being able to influence the Democratic platform. But I will say that at the end of the day, I'm not one of those individuals that believes that if I vote for you have to vote your conscience. Personally, I will vote my conscience. If I can't in good conscience vote for Hillary Clinton, if Jill Stein looks like the better option, then that's where I'm going to vote. And I think
that's Bernie Sanders ran on a Green Party ticket.
Or if he ran on a Green Party ticket.
But again, only if it's a viable option.
But at the end of the day, you have to vote your conscience. And this narrative of if you vote for Hillary or Trump means you're voting for, if you don't vote for Hillary means you're voting for Trump,
right.
That dichotomy I think is false.
Right. It is.
By the way, Paul Ryan on television today said when asked about whether or not he's going to turn the screws and put the arm on Republican members of the House, he says he's going to let them vote their conscience.
But he also said
I have to support Trump.
We'll see if that
happens. This is an interesting point about people who are on the fence between Hillary versus Trump, right? So the thing is that the Democrats will go along with Hillary. Regardless, the Democrat elected officials, regardless of the people that may be potentially running, they will go along with Hillary. The Republicans may not all, right? And so if you're against either of their agendas, right? Or if you're skeptical about who you want to have arbitrary power, if you vote Democrat, you are giving Hillary the keys of the kingdom.
And
if you vote Trump, you may not be.
And Gary Johnson has got a point, and we'll hear his point when we come back. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border tonight. A very lively edition of Beyond the Beltway.
My name is Johnny Carson. My job is to make you laugh.
Johnny Carson brings you TV legends and classic moments every night.
Don't make fun of me, Johnny.
And now through October, don't miss Here's Johnny, the making of The Tonight Show starring Johnny Carson at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. It's a must-see collection of Johnny's stage props, costumes, video, and more. For more info and tickets, go to museum.tv. A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
I did not have sexual relations with that woman, Miss Lewinsky. I never told anybody to lie, not a single time, never. These allegations are false, and I need to go back to work for the American people. Thank you.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce, you went back to Chicago. Anthony, before the break, you were saying that out of the People's Summit, there were like 7,300
people who said
they are going to run for office.
Yes.
And I have said on this program before, and I'll say it again, the legacy of Bernie Sanders is that although he may not win and be the next president, the seeds that he has planted since he announced for the presidency, they're going to come to fruition in the future.
It will.
It's not unlike Barry Goldwater. Barry Goldwater in 1964, he got massacred at the polls, okay? But again, the seeds that he planted, it led ultimately to Ronald Reagan, the growth of conservatism in the country. And I will say that the seeds that have been planted by Bernie Sanders will lead to an ultimate transition of the Democrat Party to a more progressive party. Whether it happens right away with Bernie with Hillary Clinton or whether it happens over several years. But again, he is the inspirational figure. He is a historical figure in this race. Again, he's not going to be elected president. The question is, and this is the question that I asked Amara, is with all the things that he talked about, what's going to be the first example that he has won something? And again, fighting for the platform and changing the Democratic Party rules on superdelegates, to me, that's low-hanging fruit. That's something that should happen. We're going to find out whether or not Hillary Clinton in the future, it's not going to affect her, but in the future, is she going to be able to make that change? Now, Brian, you were right in the middle of, you were chomping at the bit to get into that last segment, so pick up the ball.
All right. You used a key word earlier that I liked. The word you used was stuck. Stuck regarding Trump and regarding Hillary. People are stuck with that. Jeff, I love you. You are not thrilled about having to defend Trump. You don't want to deal with it. You're gritting your teeth getting through it. Anthony, I love you. And you are holding on to Bernie as much as you can. You don't want to let go of that. And that's the point. People get stuck with it. At the Libertarian National Convention, we've done this since 1971, first ever convention. Whenever we have candidates for president, there's six, seven, eight people running. And the last item on the thing is always NOTA, none of the above.
Ooh,
we are always willing to put that. We don't deal with superdelegates. Everybody from all the states gets to come out, and you get to shake hands with everybody. I met Austin Peterson. I met Gary Johnson. I got to talk to them and interview them, and they came right out there and dealt with it. They don't go and try to get with greased pockets because we don't have a system that works like that. And I agree.
Nor do us. Garrett, was
we
Gary
didn't,
your
we
first
go to greased pockets
was Gary,
as well.
Was Gary Johnson your first choice?
Yes, there's other guys that were great, but he was my first choice because he's not, you know, perfect 100% libertarian. Nobody's perfect in any party that they're at, but he's very pragmatic, and I liked him a lot, and he was my favorite out of it. But there were other great people. Who do we have? John McAfee as well was in there, and Austin Peterson.
I want to ask you an electability question. Where do you come down on what some people are describing as a conspiracy that's out there that would like to see either an independent party or Gary Johnson focus on one or two or three states, win those states so that it's thrown into the House of Representatives where ultimately people would vote and they would either vote for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton or perhaps for Gary Johnson? What do you think about that strategy? And are there three states that you think Gary Johnson could win?
Very much in the Midwest.
What are they?
Well, first of all, there's New Mexico. There's the one that he was a governor of.
Right.
Possibly Massachusetts. His vice presidential candidate, William Weld, was a really good governor. And they're both Republican governors from blue states, and they were very well-liked. They were very popular. And there's a lot of ones in the Midwest over there that I think would support them. I don't want to go through them all one by one, but there's a lot of them.
I would say Colorado or the state of Washington, where drugs have been, recreational drugs.
You're coming around a pot, Bruce. What are you trying to get at? I'm the libertarian. This is what happens.
But isn't that the key unifying issue for many in the libertarian movement?
Not anymore. The idea isn't marijuana. The idea is freedom. The idea is people should be able to do whatever. We call ourselves the party of pro-choice. We're not just pro-choice on abortion. Pro-choice on being able to choose what school you want to go to. Pro-choice on being able to own a woman should be able to choose what she puts in her body. She should be able to choose to own a gun. Choose where she wants to send her children to school or where she wants to go to school. Choose where she can get her health care from. She should be able to choose if she wants to get a 24-ounce Slurpee or have to take an 8-ounce Slurpee. Anybody should have the right to choose those things. And that's the same thing about pot. If you're not harming anybody else, you're choosing something. So it's much bigger than just smoking marijuana. It's about having personal choice and not worrying about repercussions like the local police force breaking down your door and shooting your dog and sending an incendiary flare and then, oh, this is the wrong house. We made a mistake. We're really sorry. We'll pay for the door. I mean, that's ridiculous when people have to worry about being severely harmed, having their lives ruined, being thrown in jail, kids smoking pot, and then they can't get a scholarship.
But would you acknowledge that in the broader – well, I want to ask everyone to offer their assessment.
Sure.
Jeff, what is your assessment of Gary Johnson, the candidate? And do you agree that there may be one or two or three states that he could win that would throw the election into the House?
I mean, I don't know. This is the thing that Brian and I were discussing earlier. You know, and the point is electoral votes, right? If you can't pick off an entire state, it doesn't matter. Right, because and the last third party candidate to do it, I believe, was George Wallace in 68 or something like that. Right, that was the last candidate to actually pull electoral votes in a third party. So, I mean, is it possible? I mean, maybe, right? And I would say maybe the same states that, you know, he would, certainly has an affinity in Utah. I mean, he's well known there. Colorado, I think, would be
New Mexico.
I'm sorry, New Mexico. You're right. I just don't know if it's possible.
Do you think it's believable? Is it believable? Let's put it, is it possible either for Gary Johnson or
you're a man of revolutions.
Bernie Sanders to win some states, yeah, if they ran independently.
Or a Green Party candidate.
Yeah.
And they win a state.
Absolutely. I think the American people are very distraught with these two candidates, Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. So that could be very much a possibility.
I don't know mathematically if he won Vermont, whether that would tip it or not.
Right, no, but I think
What do you think of this strategic possibility? That this could end up that if... It would be primarily Gary Johnson at the moment because the mechanism, they've done the work on it. They're more likely they're going to be on more ballots. What do you think of that possibility?
I think there's a possibility, but I would say probably in the next election cycle we'll be able to tell more so how possible it is. One thing that's become very evident is, and this is in looking at Bernie Sanders' numbers and supporters, is that there is a generation that is coming up that is not really beholden to party politics like our predecessors. So even within the Democratic Party, you're not seeing a whole lot of allegiance to the party itself. You're seeing people who are aligning candidates based upon their values. And I think that might also be happening on the Republican side as well, which is why Trump has been able to tap into a lot of the disaffection and frustration on the Republican side, and even opening the door for Gary Johnsons and Jill Steins to have a bigger footprint in our political debate and even in the electoral process. I don't know that we have the time now just because we're in the thick of this campaign cycle, but I do believe that in the next cycle, we're really going to see how a lot of what's happening, how it manifests. All
right. Do you believe, again, you're not a representative of the Trump campaign, but do you believe that Donald Trump would benefit if he took the lead in urging the presidential commission to include Gary Johnson and Jill Stein in a four-way debate for president?
I mean, would he benefit from the inclusion or from the urging?
No, but from both.
Well, I mean, I'm sure he would benefit from the urging, right? He'd look more magnanimous, right?
Because I don't think Hillary Clinton would support that.
I don't think Hillary absolutely won't. I mean, look at what she did with the DNC.
Let's role play that decision then. Let's say Donald Trump takes the lead in saying the debate should be a four-way debate. I want everybody to weigh in on what do you think happens if he took that lead.
I think it would be a mud fight of epic proportion. Right. I mean, there's no clear battle lines there, left or right. Right. There's two people who you can reasonably put in one of those two places. But the other two, it's like, who are they going to come at? For what reason? I mean, I think Hillary would have a lot to lose because she could get hit from the left and the right.
I think it's a tantalizing idea. It's very interesting, but I think it could also be very dangerous because I think the vote would be split more with Clinton supporters than Trump supporters. I think if Trump were to do that, it might be a strategic way to win the White House in November. It would be great to see that kind of discussion happening for the first time. But under these kind of circumstances, I don't think we can afford a Trump presidency.
Mara, what do you think?
I think it would help. It would help Trump to look more presidential.
Yes, it would.
I think it would help in that regard. And what it would do for the general public, I think, is just highlight the differences in philosophy between a Jill Stein and a Senator Sanders and a Hillary Clinton. I think Hillary would be the big loser out of all of this.
Absolutely.
It would also give Gary Johnson a platform to where
exposure.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
I'm all about more people being in debate.
Listen,
we had 17 people on a stage one time.
It
didn't work out very well.
Is this a good strategic idea for Donald Trump?
Yeah, he wouldn't do it if it wasn't. That's what he's all about. He doesn't have great ideas to win people over. Well, he's got great ideas to maneuver his way into things.
I'm talking about the five of us here at this table.
Yeah.
It seems to me that is a strategy that he could use because if he ends up with it, there's going to be more people tuned into that debate than any debate in the history of the country.
And I think it would be very fair to say that if Bernie Sanders somehow could be included in this debate, maybe as an independent candidate, that he would win the presidency.
Well, then you know what? Then the question would be, the question is there enough time to get Bernie Sanders on enough ballots where he could be elected president of the United States? Because the other thing
I don't know the time frame or the logistics behind it.
One of the criteria, because currently the presidential commissions uses this 10% threshold.
Polling data.
Yeah.
Which I don't think is a good idea. But it seems to me that if you are on the ballot, which I think this is a plus for Gary Johnson, it may not be a plus for the Green Party or other third parties because there may not be enough time to do it.
I think Bernie would get that support.
But he's got to have the mechanism.
And the time
to do it.
I know.
But my point is this. If you are on enough ballots where mathematically you could get to 270 electoral votes, you should be included in that presidential debate. That's my position. I don't think you need 10%. If you can do it, you're in the tent. Back shortly from Chicago, 1-800-723-8029.
The Signal, a rockin' new hit musical. From doo-wop to the King of Pop Blues to the Beatles.
gospel to great radio hits. The Signal, the musical about a steel town and its street corner sounds. Starring live the Spaniels, Hall of Famer Willie Rogers of the Soul Stirrers, and Stormy Weather. August 12th, 13th, and 14th. Tickets on sale now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications box office or Ticketweb.com.
The Museum of Broadcast Communications is Chicago's perfect place for senior citizens. Enjoy a stroll down memory lane. Reminisce as museum artifacts, photos, and classic TV shows trigger recollections from your childhood. Enjoy the TLC you'll receive from our expert tour guides. Discounts for groups of 20 or more. Schedule yours right now at museum.tv or call 312-245-8200. Plan your fun trip now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. I'm going to spend just a little time because we have some new guests on the program this evening to talk a little bit about who they are. And obviously, they brought a lot of passion to the discussion this evening. But Amara, Anna, you've been on this program before. But again, describe everybody to everybody listening around the country. Tell me, give us a little, 30-second bio on yourself.
So I'm a public policy consultant here in Chicago. I do a lot of work around economic development, education, workforce development, really all areas of policy. I work with community organizations. I also work with elected officials developing policy and legislation.
Anthony Cassata, you're a Democratic Socialist. You're for Bernie Sanders. We all know that.
Yep.
Tell us more personally. Tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do?
So I'm a first generation American from Logan Square. My parents are from Mexico and Costa Rica. I've experienced a lot of pain and struggle in my lifetime, and that really inspired
me. You're only 20.
I'm only 20, yeah. And in those 20 years, I've experienced a lot. I'm still experiencing them. And my passion and drive is to make sure that we create a world in which people don't have to go through this anymore, and that we can ensure a standard of living and make.
Go to school. Give us the personal stuff.
So I'm currently not going to school. I'm organizing with Reclaim Chicago, and more directly with United Neighbors of the 35th Ward.
And you said you want to run for something. What do you want to run?
I would like to run for alderman in my ward, which is the first ward.
Okay, very good. Brian Lambrick joins us. You are a libertarian, but tell us more about who you are and how you got here.
Absolutely. I am a very high anxiety, hyperactive, lovably obnoxious guy. My name's Brian. I love silent movies. I'm a member of the Chicago Silent Film Society. I go to Toastmasters. I hang out with the Chicago Astronomer. I'm all over the city. I'm an Uber driver, and I love it. It's the greatest thing that I've ever done. I make good money. I meet people from all around the world. I hear the best stories, and Uber is good. If you become an alderman, you better defend the right for people to drive around and keep drunk people off the street and be an Uber supporter, because those aldermen are going after us right now, and it is criminal.
Jeff Helm, you are with us as well. You are with the Young Republicans, but tell us a little bit more about professionally and personally what you're
doing. So that's a tough act to follow. I'm a IT solutions architect at a financial institution, so politics is actually just a hobby for me, which is kind of a weird statement to say sometimes. I graduated from DePaul. I went to high school out in Fenwick in Oak Park, lived in the city or the suburbs my entire life, loved the city of Chicago, and I wish it weren't as screwed up as it is. Other than that, let's see. I don't know. I'm involved in politics as a hobby, right?
What is the issue that excites you the most, the national issue that excites you the most?
That excites me the most. I got to say school choice, right? I'm a big proponent of school choice. I think that the Chicago public school system is awful. I think it's existed probably 20 years longer than it should have, and I think it's largely responsible for the economic ills of the South and West sides. I think people should have the right to choose where they go to school and how they get educated without it being tied to their zip code.
Brian, let me ask you a question. Libertarian, the table is set. And this should be a good year for libertarians. How do you define what a good year is? Do you think you're really going to win anything anywhere?
Winning an election. A good year is getting people around the country to be inspired and running for office in their local area. That's a big win. Changing the discussion, getting people to start talking about peace in foreign policy, bringing troops home and not meddling around in the rest of the world, supporting a free market for people so that, we've had
the party on a rise?
Oh, definitely.
Is the party in Illinois on the rise?
Yes, it is.
What about nationally?
Very much. In Illinois and nationally. Here in Illinois, we're trying to change a discussion. For example, my wife, if I can say her name, is Claire Ball, a lovely, cute, blonde woman. We just celebrated 14 years together. And she's running for Illinois controller. One of the big things that I personally care about is ballot access for everybody. Everybody should be able to be on a ballot wherever they're running. My wife has a very large threshold, 25,000 signatures on the Gary Johnson ticket, to run for Illinois controller. But here's the thing. The Illinois controller position here in Illinois is an accounting job. And in 197 years, it's never been held by an accountant. That's a problem. My wife will be the only accountant on the ballot for the accounting job. Will she get elected?
So your political goals are similar to Anthony's,
yes.
Right? It's because you want ballot access. You want more people to run for office.
Right.
That's one of your goals.
Absolutely. Of course. I would like
is there
more
any
involvement.
Is there any way in which the two of you could be joined together, or do you disagree on so many issues that you couldn't be a libertarian?
Well, no. I will never be a libertarian. I'm a democratic socialist. But the thing is, narrative.
But explain why you couldn't be a libertarian. What he stands for that is anathema to you?
Right, because they don't want big government. You want small government, minimal government as possible. Mm-hmm. You want to use government to do that. So I don't know. It feels like a contradiction in the ideology. But when it comes to real human progress and how we want to view our species in 1,000 years, I think we need to be very inclusive, and I think we need big government. And when it reflects our values, when it reflects our kind of vision for the world, then we can have real progress.
And who should pay for it? And who should pay for it?
Okay, right now, with huge wealth inequality,
now,
the billionaire
now,
class needs
now
to pay
and
for
in
it.
The future. Now and in the future.
Well, when we have a redistribution of wealth, then we can all pay for it equally. Can we not?
Segregation was legal. Slavery was legal. I don't support big government in any of those fronts.
Let's let our Republican respond to that.
I'd like to point out that recently in, I believe it was Switzerland, they put a ballot, a guaranteed basic income on the ballot. And in a state that I would hardly call Republican or even libertarian, it was defeated 2-1. Right. I mean, because this idea, this guaranteed basic income, it seems to be like having an aristocracy on the cheap. Right. Because if you always hear about how people talk about it, it's like, oh, people will be free to do what they want, which is kind of what the aristocracy was. Right. They mm-hmm. would just do what they wanted. It wasn't about, you know, following their passions or whatever. I mean,
follow their passion.
Well, I mean, and we also something that we miss a lot is whenever conversations talk about the size of government, it seems to me that it's always comes down to eliminating social services, reducing services that those who are on the lower rungs of the economic ladder receive. But when it comes to corporate welfare, when it comes to mm-hmm. banks who have been able to leverage the lack of regulations and literally crash the economy, then all of a sudden the government steps in to bail out the banks. So
I would argue.
There are a lot of things within the Libertarian Party that I agree with, and I can say that today, and I can say it tomorrow.
So let's clarify something real quick, though. But it's not big business that cares about less regulations. All that kind of, they want more regulations, right? Because big business has the ability to be able to pay people to navigate the complexity.
That's
right.
Absolutely right.
Anti-competition.
No, that's
anti-competition.
That is absolutely true. It is absolutely true mm-hmm. in any industry.
No, because without regulation, then they exploit their workers.
So hold on. Now let's be clear.
They continuously cause manipulation.
Let Jeff finish.
I'm not saying no regulation, okay? I'm not saying that the ideal state is no regulation, but you'd be hard-pressed to explain to me why a business would want to harm their consumer base who are paying them.
Tell me
why.
But
that's a different
thing. Because they're doing it.
Because
government protects
it. But this is the thing. Big business and big government love each other, right?
Yes.
Because big government knows they only have a few doors to knock on to
right.
try and knock some
right.
skulls together.
Yes, it's called anti-competition. Big businesses, the way I want to get money out of politics is instead of going after businesses and preventing people from using their money, private people, businesses, whatever, you go after the politicians. You limit their power so that they cannot be sold. When you give them power, it allows them to sell themselves at the highest bidder.
We need to eliminate the culture of corporate politics. That's the thing. We need social democracy. We need people who are representing their constituents.
That is social democracy.
So here's a question.
Corporatism is social democracy.
Back to Jeff.
It's just the chosen for
the billionaire class, and I want it to be for the majority and for the working class.
Who decides that?
You keep talking about collective action and you know, people's movements and all this kind of stuff. And so when people get together and incorporate, it's somehow now bad action. Is that right?
Wait, what was that?
So if it's all about getting the people together, yes, following the people's will, so if the people get together and decide to file articles of incorporation, now that's somehow a bad thing.
Well, I think – so I would say, for example, Citizens United, I think, was one of the worst court cases decided by the Supreme Court in history. But again, the hypocrisy that I want to point out, or the contradiction that I want to point out, is the fact that Republicans do talk about limited government. But the fact that you said what you just said about being able to – the big government loves big business, they've been able to –
and vice versa.
Right. They've been able to manipulate – government to their advantage,
right,
or, for
exactly,
example, in the case of tax havens, where they can pay attorneys
to
siphon money that should be coming to this country.
So how do tax havens get created?
By having accountants who've learned how to navigate a complex, supremely complex tax.
And how does the complex laws system get created?
Mara, they write those laws.
I want to ask you this question, okay? We've only got a couple of minutes left, okay? There's been a lot of passion at this table this evening, okay? There's been a lot of passion. Donald Trump has brought it to the debate. Bernie Sanders has brought it to debate. A little less so for Hillary Clinton. My question to you, and for those listening around the country, you're African-American. My question to you is this. How much passion is there in the African-American communities of America? Are they as passionate as the people at this table? And where are they? What are they going to do in November?
Well, that it's a complex question. I think with Hillary Clinton, she had the benefit of name recognition and the residual memories of her husband's terms as president. And I think that was what largely gave her the numbers that she saw in South Carolina and other states. But as far as passion, I don't think that you're really seeing a lot of passion for her as a candidate. Now, Sanders, who has been able to tap into particularly the younger voters and voters who aren't as beholden to the identity politics nor the party politics, you see a lot of passion, even with African American voters. I think there's also the issue of President Obama and his historic presidency, but yet there's also some dissatisfaction with the ability for him to really definitively move on some of the issues that have plagued the African American community. So you'll hear some of that too. So I think that it's really a toss up. I don't see the passion for Hillary Clinton on the Democratic side. You even see some African Americans going over to Trump. I think what's clear all around is that the African Americans are not voting monolithically, and they're really still trying to find out whose values are best aligned to help us.
Folks, we've got to pause. Thanks for joining us tonight.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
A historic moment from the archives at museum.tv.
There can be no stable and enduring peace without the participation of the People's Republic of China and its 750 million people. That is why I have undertaken initiatives in several areas to open the door for more normal relations between our two countries.
Experience more history at museum.tv.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. Amara, the last time you were on this program, I think you said to me you thought Donald Trump could be elected president. Do you still believe that?
Not that you want him, but that it's possible. That's a different dynamic.
You
there.
Did say that, didn't you not, at one point on this program?
I think I might have said that, but I don't know. I, I, at this point, I mean, some of the things that he said, even in the wake of the, what happened in Orlando and just some of his comments, every time I think that he might be moving or changing his narrative, then he reverts back to himself. And I don't think that he can save himself from himself. So I don't think that he can be, I guess I don't think he can be elected.
Anthony, yep. You identified yourself earlier in the program as gay. My question to you is, one of the stories that's circulating now is that in the wake of what happened in Orlando, Donald Trump has reached out and said some things that could be viewed as positive and supportive of the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community. He's the first Republican that's ever used that term. And my question to you is, and I know you despise the man, but put your political analyst hat on, if you will.
Sure.
Is there an opportunity for him to demonstrate that maybe there's a reason for gays to support him?
No, and that's because the LGBT community has faced oppression and kind of bigotry already. And for him to be trying to tap into this unification between that community by, you know, providing this, you know, bigotry narrative against Muslims, we will not stand behind that. The LGBT community will not stand behind Donald Trump.
You don't think that there are some gay and lesbians that may feel that same way about Muslims, that maybe there should be either a wait and see on whether or not they should.
Again, I can't speak for every single person. That's a mathematical improbability. But I'm saying the majority of the community will not support Donald Trump. We understand. We felt bigotry. We felt that hatred. We felt that racism before throughout our personal lives. So for Donald Trump to be providing that narrative against a religious group, we just can't stand behind that.
Jeff.
So I actually think there's at least one prominent commentator or personality that comes to mind. That's Milo Yiannopoulos, right? Milo Yiannopoulos, tech editor of Breitbart, openly gay man, right? I went to see him at DePaul a couple weeks ago. It was very entertaining until protesters showed up. But Milo Yiannopoulos has been making the case for gays to support Trump, right? Because for some reason, as he puts it, the left's political grievance hierarchy at the top is the Muslim religion. And the problem is that the Muslim religion and women's rights and gay rights clash somewhat violently, as we saw in Orlando. And so I think that absolutely there is going to be some movement on the needle towards Trump.
And also historically in New York, I mean, he's been supportive of past gay and lesbian related issues because he's a businessman and he's from New York.
Yeah, so I think that actually
also the only constituency group that he's not overtly insulted.
I think a lot of Republicans would agree with a live and let live kind of standard, and this you will be made to care thing where it's to say that the LGBT community and women's rights and feminists are not aggressors in the culture war is kind of ridiculous.
Do you believe, Amara, that the issue of the Clinton Foundation's acceptance of money from so many nations that have a horrible record on homosexuality, on women's rights, do you think that brings up a hypocrisy issue that is viable, should be discussed, and maybe it is Achilles' heel for Hillary Clinton?
The Clinton Foundation presents a challenge for Hillary, not just for the donations that they've received, but also for their actions in Haiti, for example, that I think that's been an undertold story that really speaks to the values behind the Clintons. So that coupled with the donations that they've received, I think just further feed into the narrative of distrust, that can she be trusted? What will she say? What won't she say to get elected? So I think it just feeds into an existing narrative.
In my view, that will be the issue post-convention, assuming that Donald Trump still is the Republican nominee, that will be, I think, for the Republicans, that will be a defining issue. We're going to hear more of it. We haven't heard a lot about it right now, including some things with Laurelette University, which has some questionable things about an educational institution, just as Donald Trump has problems with Trump U.
And that's the problem the challenge with Clinton is that there are so many areas with which Donald Trump can really dig in and uncover a lot of the things that have been that are harmful to her character and to her standing as a candidate. And I think that he will.
What would this is what if? What do you think would happen to the country if Donald Trump was elected president, Ryan?
That's a nice
that's a
question.
Big question.
Yeah.
I want everybody to give me 30 seconds on that. What do you think?
30 seconds. Trump gets elected. Economy's going to tank and government's going to get bigger. It's going to infringe on more people's rights. It's going to start overstepping its bounds. We're going to get involved in more wars around the world. And it's the same exact thing if Hillary gets elected.
Anthony, 15 seconds to you. We only got 15 seconds.
More than 100 days, I think there'd be huge social disruption. I mean, I know I will stand with my brothers and march down Washington, D.C. to prove a point to the American people that we will not tolerate this tyrant running our country.
Even if the people vote for him.
Again, I think this will be a revolutionary time in American history.
Amara.
It would be a foreign policy disaster that would be to the detriment of our country on the world stage.
Jeff.
You know, I think there's a lot of uncertainty about what would happen. And I think that actually a lot wouldn't change. I think that that a lot of the current policies would stay in place. I think, yeah, there's some questions of what would happen from a foreign policy perspective. But the thing is that we know exactly what would happen if Hillary Clinton would get elected, right? And that's that she will continue this behavior, that she is above the law, that laws are for little people. She can do whatever she wants. She can take money from foreign governments and do whatever she wants.
So let's hold her accountable.
Yeah, let's hold her accountable by voting for Donald Trump.
By voting for Bernie Sanders.
Gary Johnson.
Amara's.
I have to say, I can't say, you guys
the microphone is getting away from her.
I know.
Technical malfunction.
Amara, India, thank you very much. Brian Lambrick, thank you very much. Libertarian. Anthony Quesada, always good to have you with us. And also Jeff Halm.
That's correct.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Bruce.
This is a Gen B production produced and associated with AM 560 The Answer. And our thanks to Colin Bobbitt and Dan Dorfman and Fritz Goldman for the assistance in the production of this program. Happy Father's Day, everybody. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
The Signal, a rockin' new hit musical. From doo-wop to the king of pop, blues, to the Beatles, gospel, to great radio hits. The Signal, the musical about a steel town and its street corner sounds. Starring live, The Spaniels, Hall of Famer Willie Rogers of the Soul Stirrers, and Stormy Weather. August 12th, 13th, and 14th. Tickets on sale now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications box office or TicketWeb.com.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that.